is America and the World, voices of a new generation in foreign policy from the Council on Foreign Relations. Welcome to the program. I'm Kati Martin. Albania. Few Americans can even locate it on the map. It's below Yugoslavia and above Greece, a dangerous neighborhood. Although considered the backwater of all Europe for the past millennium, change has come to Albania at a breakneck speed. The most isolated, paranoid, and repressive dictatorship has suddenly crumbled. And after half a century of isolation, Albania and the U.S. are not just talking, but have become staunch friends. Albania is seen by many in Washington as a center of calm in the chaotic Balkans. And this is no mean feat, since there are more than twice the number of ethnic Albanians living outside the country in the former Yugoslavia than there are inside its borders. Joining us first today is the president of Albania, Sali Berisha. Now, more than half of Albanians live outside Albania itself in the former Yugoslavia. This presents a great problem for you. What lessons have you drawn from the terrible situation in Bosnia, and how are you learning from that?
Since the very beginning, we went in an other direction. We insisted and we determined as a main goal a democratic space for Albanians wherever Albanians they are. That is, a rule of law, market economy, democratic institutions, without changing borders through force, but permeable borders, free movement. Mm-hmm. I think this option is still the best option for all Albanians. I'm happy to see that it worked in Albania. I'm unhappy that it doesn't work for Kosovo, for Albanians in Kosovo. That's the reason that I assisted in my meetings with President Clinton, Secretary of State Department Warren Christopher. I insisted them to include the question of Kosovo.
Tell us what it's like for an Albanian in Kosovo.
I think they are definitely having a real apartheid there. That is, all public life is suppressed, is paralyzed. It's going in a very different way, that schools are happening in private houses, in ware stores, and a terrible situation. Hospitals in majority are not functioning, enterprises are closed, there are some private activities, there is mostly a police regime there everywhere, and a huge military buildup in the province.
But now Albanians are 90% of the population in Kosovo. So how can 90% of the population be kept down by the 10% Serb population?
No, this is not going to happen for a long time. That's the reason I insisted to put Kosovo in the agenda. Otherwise, the risks of the explosion there are very high. Especially when Albanians will see that they are going to have a settlement for north, and to see themselves left aside, they will get in a great despair. Rugova could lose all the control. Rugova has done a tremendous job in keeping under the control situation and in fixing the peaceful solution there. I am very much concerned about this problem.
Explain, Mr. President, if you will, who you are referring to. I don't think our listeners...
Rugova is the leader of Albanians in Kosovo. He is an elected leader there. He's the president of Albanians in Kosovo. He has adopted a very pacific attitude, and he is called the Gandhi of the region, but I am very much afraid that his Gandhism will come to an end after people will be aware that they are left, they are ignored in a terrible situation in the midst of Europe.
Are you saying that he's more or less sold out to the Serb powers?
Yes.
Let's talk about Albanians in Albania. You inherited a country that was really the poor man of Europe. Backward, isolated, paranoid. How do you bring that country into the modern era? How do you inculcate democratic habits in such a country?
Definitely Albania came from the deepest darkness, and in some aspect medieval darkness of the communist regime. But I think in 3 years what we decided to use all our mandate in order to proceed with a profound reform in all respects. In 3 years we have succeeded to replace almost all communist laws with new laws of European models, which are drafted with American and European experts and are very good laws. The growth is two-digit growth country, is the fastest in Eastern Europe. The per capita income has increased from $200 to $700. That is, we have now a macroeconomic stability. I agree with you, we remain the poor man of Europe, but with a healthy poor man.
Well, you get very high ratings from the IMF. If I were a businessman with lots of money to spend, which unfortunately I'm not, what would you advise me to invest in Albania?
Albania represents several possibilities. It's the country, I think, the most interesting country for investment. And where tourism is one of the greatest potential, but also the big branch of infrastructure, telecommunications, is another. We have very good laws about investment, I think among best laws. And now we are, as we succeeded to be a fast model, we are trying to keep this model. We are studying some Southeast Asian incentives to adopt there for foreign investors in order to encourage them more and more and to bring Albania more into their attention.
Southeast Asia, like Singapore and Taiwan.
They have been very successful in identifying incentives for investment and exports. This in these two dimensions, they worked very well.
So that's interesting. You're not looking to your neighbors in the Balkans and in Central Europe as role models. You're looking to Southeast Asia.
We are looking first to the most liberal model of economy, and I think we are going to become. Having in 3 years 75% of GDP coming from private sector, I could assure you that in 4 or 5 years it will be 90 or 95%. And that means great. And this was achieved not through oil, not through gas, but this was achieved through sweat and energy of Albanians in free initiative.
And are American investors coming?
They are coming, but they should come more and more.
Now, another of the great challenges that faces you as president of Albania is that there's no tradition for democracy in your country. It has always been ruled by strong men. And you are, clearly, I have just met you, but it's clear to me that you are a strong man. How do you resist the temptation for one-man rule and for the cult of the personality, which was so prevalent in the region?
Yes, it's a right question. First, I opposed the presidential regime. I opposed.
How do you do that?
Because we have had two-thirds. And when we have had two-thirds in parliament, we were able to install a presidential regime through votes. I told no. We have to develop parliamentary tradition. We miss parliamentary tradition. We have to leave to future generation to decide for a presidentiality. But for the beginning, let's have a strong parliament and go this way. I could not say that. I have to accept. I have done tough decision because it was hard time, and it is hard time when you liberalize prices and they go out 15 times higher, or when you cut the 40% of your administration. I don't think that you have to wait to be applauded by such measures.
No.
But they are very important for the future, and I'm deeply convinced that despite the dissociation that do exist between the political decisions and their understanding in a long-term understanding, they were right decisions, and I'm happy that we did. I do regret only if we have postponed them.
Is there then room for dissent within your political system? Are there parties that disagree with you, and are they allowed to be heard not only in parliament but in the media?
There are many parties that fully disagree with me. They are allowed to be listened in radio, TV, and they have their press and they have all their rights. I also disagree with them because they have Karl Marx in their program, and I consider Marx as one of the philosophers of the greatest tragedy that human mankind has survived in its long history. This is the rule of democracy. That's pluralism. Everyone has to defend his ideas.
And what about the television and radio? They're allowed to be as contentious as.
Yes, they are allowed definitely in equal parts. But what we are going to do to put a law in order to privatize the television and radio, and I will be very happy when I reach that.
And when will this happen?
A parliamentary commission is working on that. I think during this year or first month, because they are drafting the law, a first month of the first year will happen this important event. I consider very important private mass media. I'm deeply convinced they are important.
So a free press to you
definitely
is an inherent part of a democracy.
Yes. I was against the law of the press. We passed the law. Why we passed the law? Journalists insisted on that. I told them we don't need it because we have in our former old codes a saying which says messengers could not be touched. Journalists are messengers. Right or wrong, they are messengers. And that's why I told them, let us respect this law, and that's all.
How much longer do you have as president of Albania?
As a president of Albania, we will have new elections on 96. Definitely, I will win the elections and the second term.
Well, we wish you very good luck, and
thank you very much
for being
thank
with
you.
Us,
thank
Mr.
you very
Berisha.
Much. It was a great pleasure to meet you.
Coming up next, an American who helped Albanian students set up the first free student press. Stay with us. We're back with America and the World from National Public Radio. I'm Kati Martin. Our next guest is Fred Abrams, who spent a year in Albania helping to set up the first student-run newspaper there. He's just returned from a fact-finding mission in Macedonia and Albania for Human Rights Watch, Helsinki. Welcome to the program, Fred.
Thank you.
Fred, what took you to Albania?
Well, I first arrived in the country on a project with two colleagues of mine. We went to help the students at the University of Tirana start their own independent newspaper. The Faculty of Journalism had been closed for 12 years, and we went to help teach them all of the aspects of a newspaper production. I mean, from desktop publishing, reporting and writing, to distribution and sales. And
were they very receptive to your instructions?
The students were perhaps the most wonderful part of the whole project. I mean, if Enver Hoxha's communism did one thing, it educated the people. And they are so well-versed, despite their isolation, so well-versed in history, literature. And so the students were very receptive.
And what were some of the problems that confronted you from the authorities?
Well, the students were successful in producing the first issue of the paper. And unfortunately, it was received very well by the journalist community, but it wasn't received as well by the university authorities. And the paper came out on a Thursday. And on the following Monday, the office in the university which we had been given was closed. The computers were confiscated, the computers that were donated by an American foundation. And students were threatened with expulsion. Myself and my two colleagues were kicked out of the university.
What did you do to provoke such ire from this fledgling democracy?
Well, that depends on who you ask. To us, the three Americans, it was because we were didn't have proper qualifications to be teaching at the university. To the students, it was a contractual agreement with the computers. In my opinion, the real reason had to do primarily with the content of the newspaper itself.
Which was?
At that time, President Berisha had just signed into law a press law. The law was passed right at the time the first issue of the paper was appearing.
Excuse me for interrupting you, Fred, but President Berisha just minutes ago declared that it was not he who signed that press law, but the journalists, and that he was opposed to that press law.
Well, I was in the country at the time, and I know there was a great debate about the press law while it was in Parliament. And I believe seven of the Albanian newspapers, the opposition and independent newspapers, staged a strike. They ran blank pages with a headline that said, this is what our articles will look like under the new press law.
Okay, tell us, just in broad strokes, what exactly this press law entailed. Did it empower journalists or the opposite?
Well, the press law was taken from a law of the German state Rhineland-Westphalia. Mm-hmm. And the Albanian government was very eager to point out that this was a model, that was a European model. Unfortunately, the law is very restrictive. It imposes fines of up to $8,000 on journalists who are in violation of the law, which is a sum which would put any Albanian newspaper right out of business. It allows government officials to withhold information which they deem a state secret, or very vague terminology like injurious to the morals of youth. And I should point out that, there are a number of countries that have restrictive press laws. The question is, are they applied? And since the law came into force, there have been, to my knowledge, five cases. And in all of those cases, they have been against journalists or editors from opposition or independent newspapers.
So despite President Berisha's energetic claims to the contrary, you don't believe that there's meaningful press freedom in Albania?
Well, I think we need to look at it in its context, because freedom in this sense, it is a very relative term. President Berisha was absolutely correct when he said Albania has emerged from the deepest darkness. We can never understand how complete and repressive a system Enver Hoxha had. Just to give one example.
The communist leader, yes. since the end of the Second World War.
Yes.
Who just died in, 1986?
1985, he died. That's right. He ruled for more than 40 years. To give you an example of freedom of expression in communist Albania, I met a man who lived in a southern town. It's appropriately named Afir, F-I-E-R. And he was arrested because he said in public that the shop had run out of cheese.
You know, wow, so provocative.
In the socialist paradise of Albania, there's always cheese. So, I mean, this is freedom of expression, or was freedom of expression in Albania.
So this was in the former regime,
yes.
not under Berisha's
yes,
regime.
Yes.
Okay, so things have improved.
So when you look at it from that perspective, and you have to look at it in this way, things, Albania is tremendously free. I mean, the freedom of the press, it's a huge marketplace of ideas and information. However, you have a new ball game today. You have Albania is a member of the Council of Europe. Albania is a member of the United Nations. It was beforehand as well. And Albanian law allows for basic fundamental human rights and freedoms, including press freedom. So if these are our new standards, then unfortunately I can't say that that the current situation is up to par.
So it's imperfect, but you think that the direction in which it's heading is the right one? Or do you think that President Berisha's instincts are to keep power very much centrally located?
Well, I think the key question was what you raised regards the private television and radio. Albania is predominantly a rural population, and although there are opposition newspapers, the distribution system is centralized and corrupt, and most people get their news from the radio and television. And both of these medias are very strongly controlled by the state. It has been the focus of human rights organizations for the last 4 years. And so it's and when this law that is supposedly in parliament, it's been in this stage for the last at least 2 years that I'm aware of. There are elections in Albania coming up in spring of 96. Mr. Berisha says that the new law will be passed at the latest the first month of this year. I have to express my serious pessimism about that.
Why should Americans care about what goes on in this small, very poor, rather backward country on the fringes of the European continent?
Well, I think President Berisha was correct. The Albania question is of paramount importance.
Because of the ethnic populations that outside its borders.
Precisely. It may be the central issue in the southern Balkans. You have 2 million Albanians in Kosovo, at least 500,000 in Macedonia. And I agree 100% with the president when he says that an agreement with the Belgrade government must include Kosovo. It has to be on the agenda. I agree with him very much. But where I disagree is he says that we are striving for a democratic space. He used that term for Albanians all over, wherever Albanians may be. Well, I would say that you have to begin at home and create a democratic space right where Albanians have their own country. And I think there's a way, still a ways to go to achieve that.
Now, so far, the Albanian populations, and they're the majority in Kosovo, and a minority in Montenegro and Macedonia, have been relatively calm. One doesn't read much about unrest in those places from Albanians. What accounts for that?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I should say that the situation in Kosovo is tragic. You have really an apartheid-type system. It is essentially a colonial rule by a Serb minority. In Macedonia, the situation is much more complex. Albanians are not under the duress that they are in Kosovo, but there are still tensions, inter-ethnic tensions. But I think the main reason why there's been calm is because that is Western policy right now.
So we've in effect struck a deal, the Clinton administration and President Berisha, that if they don't raise too much of a fuss about their ethnic populations beyond their borders, then we won't raise too much of a fuss about what goes on within their borders. Is that it?
I wouldn't disagree with that. I think we have been a very strong supporter of President Berisha and his Democratic Party from the beginning. When he was campaigning in 1992, the first American ambassador, William Ryerson, was on the podium next to Mr. Berisha campaigning. And since then, we've had a very consistent support for his policies. And I think there is danger in this because Albanians have a tradition of strong rulers. Before Enver Hoxha was another person, Ahmet Zog, who declared himself a king. So there's a real tradition, and I think to give one person or one group of persons too much power in Albania is very dangerous. I think the future of that country lies in a parliamentary republic.
On the other hand, since the region is so inflamed, perhaps it's not a bad transition mode to be in. That is letting the greater concern for Washington being regional calm as opposed to, let's face it, democratization within Albania's borders.
Yes, I mean, that's a valid point. And we have to admit that policy has been successful. The red line goes from Tirana in Albania through Macedonia to Bulgaria, and that's the the limit where the below this line, the war is not to spread. And it's true. It's been successful. But the problem is I do not see any long-term strategy. The Kosovar Albanians under President Rugova, who is admired, who I admire as well.
Who President Berisha referred to slightly critically as sort of a Gandhi-esque
figure
who sold out, he said.
Yes, but Rugova's position and the Democratic League of Kosovo, which is the ruling party in Kosovo, has has taken a very passive resistance, and they've created a parallel society. There are schools in people's homes because Albanians have been kicked out of all of the institutions. They have their own hospitals, and the problem is it's very much a withdraw and wait. And this, I think, is endorsed. The American policy would like to see this. Let us take care of it. And I think this is one very symptomatic issue of Albanian mentality, that Albanians are very quick to listen to and cater to a higher authority,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time step on those who are beneath them. Mm-hmm. And
do you see this changing as Albanians are exposed to other cultures, other ways? I assume there is now much greater travel possibilities for Albanians. Obviously, they're watching television from Western Europe and so on. So the world has just been open to them very, very recently.
There's no question. It's a wonderful country. It's a fascinating place because nowhere has there been so much change as in Albania in the last 4 years. And I know people, you know, I met a guy who was brought into the police station during the communist times because he listened to the Beatles on his radio.
Hmm.
Okay. And so, of course, now there are a lot of foreigners. Albanians are in Albania. Albanians are traveling. There's so much positive change. And as critical as I am of the human rights record of the Albanian government, you know, it's a process. And it will take time.
What's it like for an American living in Albania?
It's a wonderful experience. I mean, I originally went to Albania to teach something about journalism, but I feel very strongly I came away learning much, much more than I ended up teaching.
What did you learn?
Well, first of all, there's a saying in Albania about mikpritja, which is simply hospitality. And it's one of the warmest, kindest places, despite its poverty. It's a very poor country.
Mm. Mm. And what do you think you passed on to them?
I would like to think we taught something about journalism. Many of the students, the student newspaper, by the way, is still going. And many of the students who were involved have gone on to work in other Albanian journals, magazines. And so I would like to think we taught something about that. But most importantly, perhaps the most important lesson of that whole project, the whole student newspaper project, was to show that there are possibilities. I mean, the life in communist Albania was so closed that people were always facing a wall. And I think it's the one contribution that Americans can make. We have the unlimited frontiers, and we're always looking to how to solve a problem, how to create. And I would like to hope that we help to instill that positive approach in the students.
Do you plan on going back?
Definitely, definitely. I it's sort of an Albanian virus, and I think I'm going to return as often as I can.
Fred Abrams, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
For the Council on Foreign Relations, I'm Kati Martin, and this has been America and the World. Join us again next week.
America and the World is produced by the Council on Foreign Relations, a nonprofit, nonpartisan membership organization dedicated to improving understanding of U.S. foreign policy and international affairs, and publisher of Foreign Affairs magazine. The producer is Erica Burke. Associate producer, Irina Foskianis. For more information, write The Council on Foreign Relations, 58 East 68th Street, New York, New York, 10021. America and the World is made possible by a generous grant from the 9X family of companies, Helping People Communicate Using Information, Networks, and Services, and the Charles Stuart Mott Foundation. This is NPR, National Public Radio.